And a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. Simple, just search for the Nick Craig Show, tap the subscribe or follow button, and you'll take a new show with you each and every weekday morning. You can also listen online by visiting the website, nickcraig.com. We've got a jam-packed Wednesday morning ahead for you here on the show, and we will start off in the North Carolina General Assembly, where there is a leadership change coming to and announced yesterday for the North Carolina Senate with huge impacts here across southeastern North Carolina. State Senator Michael Lee has been elected the new majority leader of the North Carolina Senate, putting him the number two man in charge behind Senate Leader Phil Berger. This position opened up after we learned just 1 week ago that Senator Paul Newton would be retiring and leaving his role within the North Carolina Senate and making his way into private industry and business. He is going and taking a position over as general counsel over at UNC Chapel Hill, retiring from the North Carolina Senate to take that position. That left the majority leader spot open, and State Senator Michael Lee yesterday was elected by his group of colleagues, Senate Republicans, to take over this role. Senator Lee said in a statement, quote, "It's an honor to have the support and the trust of my colleagues. Our caucus is filled with incredible individuals who bring a wealth of knowledge and experience to the General Assembly. I look forward to working with every caucus member to help accomplish their priorities and build on the last 14 years of successful policy achievements." We hopefully will be joined, working at the schedule right now, joined by Senator Lee coming up Friday morning. He'll join us right here on the Nick Craig Show talking about this new position and what it means for residents here across southeastern North Carolina. Now, for Senator Lee, serving in important roles is not anything new for him. He's currently the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee. That is the group that is responsible, well, for appropriating all of the funds that do come out of the North Carolina General Assembly. So in that role, already a very influential position. He's also the chairman of the Education and Higher Education Committees. As you can imagine, based on the name there, that committee and committees are responsible for education funding across the state. And he also serves on the Commerce and Insurance, Healthcare, Judiciary, and Rules and Operations Committee. Already a very big workload there for Senator Lee. We did also get some comments from Senate Leader Phil Berger, the Republican out of Rockingham County, the number one man in the North Carolina Senate. He says, quote, "Michael works day in and day out to do the best for his constituents. He is somewhat of an every senator, Republican or Democrat, and that you can turn to for advice and mentorship. I am thankful for his willingness to step forward to help lead our caucus." Now, as I mentioned, the committees in which Senator Lee sits on, one of them, of course, Appropriations and Higher and Education Committees. He's the chairman of both of those. And, well, when you are in those positions, well, you have obviously a lot of power and influence over funding and going through those processes. And one of the things that he attempted to do was provide the New Hanover County school system with about $3.2 million for a pilot program to deal with artificial intelligence that was shot down by the New Hanover County Board of Education last week. Two Democrats, two Republicans, Melissa Mason and David Perry voting with two Democrats, radical lunatic extremists, Judy Justice and Tim Merrick, to kill and spike that pilot. It did come up again at their meeting, their regularly scheduled April meeting last night, and even attempts from other board members to get the item back on the agenda for reconsideration, to take another look at it, to have a more in-depth discussion. Well, that fell short with, once again, two Democrats and two Republicans, Melissa Mason, David Perry, voting with Judy Justice and Tim Merrick to once again deny that money and just send it back to the General Assembly, meaning that New Hanover County will not be getting access to this $3.2 million and will not be able to participate in this pilot program, which essentially means they have no input, right? You want to be part of a pilot, at least from my vantage point. You're part of a pilot program. You're allowed to provide insight. You're allowed to provide information, feedback, so that lawmakers, a pilot program, no different than a pilot television show, right, you see if something works and then you begin the process of maybe rolling it out on a more broad scale. Well, unfortunately, due to the decisions of those lawmakers or those board members here in New Hanover County, that's not happening. Right? That's not going to happen now. And, you know, what does this mean for future pilot programs for New Hanover County? For the school system, you can probably say they're dead on arrival. There's no reason that I see the General Assembly appropriating another single dollar for a pilot program in New Hanover County. I mean, that's just over with now. So you can thank your board members for that. But I think it probably has a little bit of an impact on the region as a whole. Right. As we sit here this morning, we are discussing major changes as it relates to property tax increases across New Hanover County. That is due to property reevaluations that are took place over the last couple of months and will be rolling out with your new tax bill, which comes up later this year. And so when you've got a group of individuals that are going forward and deciding to not take money from the state, and then go to the county commissioners, which is exactly what's going to happen, go to the county commissioners and beg and plead for tens of millions of dollars, it's going to create a very, very interesting dynamic. And it is likely to create some major problems for our school system. You know, I heard the grandstanding from Democrats last night about how, oh, we just need to focus on this and focus on the school system, focus this, focus that. Yet it's the same individuals that are constantly talking about, oh, we need more funding for this, we need more funding for that. I mean, it's just a constant back and forth with these individuals as the process unfolds, and they, you know, talk about how there's not enough money for public schools, yet back and forth, that's exactly what happens. And there's apparently no money, yet you're turning away $3.2 million that could have been used to increase security within the school system, could have been used to increase and give more and have more money available for a pilot security program, which could have alleviated some of the stresses that currently exist in terms of workload on the school system. But for whatever reason, two Democrats and two Republicans continue to spike the football on this, and they've now officially turned that money away. That money will just go back to the state, and Davidson County will be the only county in the state that has any impact, any feedback on the AI pilot program that was being discussed here across New Hanover County. And, you know, I speak about the comments at last night's school board meeting. You know, we heard over and over again from individuals on the school board, specifically Judy Justice, who is always talking about, oh, how we need more money, how we need this, how we need that. I would like to play some of her comments last night so you can hear somebody that's turning down money, what they have to say. And always a typical Democrat trope, we need to get to the important issues. But you don't think a $3.2 million grant dealing with education funding, dealing with safety and security of children, you don't think that's a germane issue to discuss? Judy Justice says this every single time something comes up that she disagrees with. Yeah. So this is at the school board meeting last night. Just take a listen to a minute of this. It's pretty hard to stomach because it's just nonsensical rambling from the left. But I think it's important to listen to.
We've already seen the new information, which really isn't new. And I think that all of us up here made our decision on a lot of factors besides that very small part that really didn't even, I'm not even sure, except that they want us to revisit the issue. We voted, we made a decision. Dr. Merritt's point was very useful, but we've got an awful lot of things going on in this district, in our classrooms, in our schools. Safety is our priority.
Is it though? You know, well, we've got a lot going on in our schools, so much going on in our schools. So you it's not worth having a 30 minute discussion on it because there's so much going on in our schools? Doesn't make any sense.
Those of us that voted against it, and I'm going to be straight about why I did it because it was not the best company. The money was a huge question, and I know that there's better ways to use that kind of money. It wasn't just given to us. Plus, that company could have just fallen apart the way it was running, being run.
By the way, the money was, in fact, just given to you. The money's not questionable. It's coming directly from the North Carolina General Assembly. It is guaranteed money. And then she's slandering the company, indicating they're just going to fold and fall apart. Doesn't make any sense there either.
So there's many other reasons besides this new information, why we voted the way we did. Can we please focus on what's important to the classrooms? Safety is a huge issue. If we want to focus on safety, then focus on what we've got going here and need to look at. There's resources in this community. The county commissioner gave a lot of money, gave lots of money for safety issues about, well, concerning the shooting at New Hanover. Then they took the money away. It's a different county commissioners now. We need to be approaching them.
But, yeah, good
you know,
luck with
stop
that.
Waste, and I'm going to say this straight. This is political.
Ah, yes.
Okay.
Everything is political, right? It's political to get $3.5 million from the state to increase security funding. And she talks about, oh, the county commissioners, you know, they're going to give us money. There's David Perry walking in late to the meeting. You know, how it will go to the county commissioners. Newsflash, Judy Justice, the county commissioners aren't going to give you guys any more money. They've watched this board completely fumble the football in when it relates to this grant program. And then they're just going to open up the coffers for all of the needs and wishes of the school system. It's not going to happen. I am hopeful that as the school board, which passed their budget last night, as they go to the county commissioners and make their ask, that the county commissioners excoriate the school board for their incompetence, excoriate the school board for their actions. And it was brought up by board member Josie Barnhart that the school system is asking for about $1 million from the county to increase security through a variety of different systems, some of which could have been purchased with the $3.2 million that the state was going to give them. So now you and I, the local taxpayer, are going to be on the hook for about $1 million ask for additional security measures within the school system, when the school system had that money available. And they completely fumbled taking advantage of it. And I really am struggling to wrap my head around why this is such a good thing. And why individuals are saying that this is such a great idea. And so this idea that you're just going to go back to the county and request however many dollars to do a similar program just makes absolutely no sense to me. It makes absolutely no sense at all. So I look forward to watching this discussion play out. I want to play this clip from school board member Josie Barnhart at the meeting last night talking about the amount of money that they are now going to have to get from local dollars because they turned away this state program. Take a listen.
Mr. Perry?
Oh, actually, I'm sorry. That's the vote part of this. I'll see if I can get that pulled up here. But it just goes to show you the issues that exist when you decide that you're going to take money out of the school system and turn away a significant amount of dollars. Which is exactly what they decided to do last night. So, this is an unfortunate decision. It likely affects New Hanover County in the long run because this money, of course, is now not going to be available. I would presume that this county will not see additional dollars coming forward because of this. That the school system is likely going to have to deal with now the state being unwilling to give them any more grants or any other pilot programs, and then they're going to go beg and plead to the county commissioners for more money. Here's that audio from last night. Take a listen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like for the board to reconsider this vote, and I believe it's in the best interest of taxpayers and the direction of this district. Since the vote last week, more information has come to light, including the fact that our current cameras that we have just recently purchased in the last year already have artificial intelligence installed on them, and we are actually utilizing some of the formats of artificial intelligence, acknowledging that facial recognition is one of the components that we have turned off currently. This company is a global company. that also stores data on the cloud, which was another concern. I think this pilot should be revisited because we would be able to allocate funding from the state level to help the goals of the district to accommodate, one, the monitoring security camera asks that we have in the budget currently for our county commissioners, two, the upgraded camera systems that we have in the budget for the county commissioners, three, the Raptor systems that we've been actively seeking to pursue for years that we were just informed of this afternoon by the superintendent. That is over $1 million that we are asking for the county for. When we were discussing the topic at hand, the concerns absolutely warranted were guardrails in place. We need to discuss this. We need to continue to seek every source of funding we can for our public schools. And this is worthy a discussion for that. Thank you, ma'am.
You know, it's so funny because the Democrats, Judy Justice and Tim Marrick, are always screaming about those bastards in the General Assembly, right? How they don't have it. They don't give us any money, how we need more money for schools, yet they snub their nose when more money is available. And so now you and I are going to have to burden the cost of this because two Democrats, Judy Justice and Tim Marrick, and two Republicans, Melissa Mason and David Perry, decided to turn down the money. We've got some chats coming in this morning on our various live feeds over on the YouTube chat. The optics of turning down safety money from the state to then pass a motion to proceed to go to the county commission where you'll ask for said safety money and stipends for yourself is no bueno. Couldn't agree any more with that comment. Thanks for joining us live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. And that's really all there is to say. The vote's over with now. The discussion is done with at this point. It's not going to come back up for a vote. It failed. And now we watch this play out as these individuals go in front of the county commission and ask for tens of millions of dollars, including an increase in security camera systems and some other technologies that this grant could have likely funded. So just straight up incompetence, and I look forward to the county commissioners excoriating the school board, specifically the chairwoman and other Republicans on that board, for then going forward and making this ask of our county commissioners. It's completely absurd, and we'll see how it plays out. We'll keep an eye on it right here on the Nick Craig Show. We'll talk about that budget coming up here over the next couple of weeks. Turning our attention to some local news this morning, Azalea Fest, the 78th annual North Carolina Azalea Fest, is set to kick off this week and over the next couple of days across southeastern North Carolina. And, well, it kicks off this afternoon with the Queen's Coronation, which will be taking place at Greenfield Lake. That happens at 3 o'clock. Tomorrow, there is a celebrity reception lunch, which is being held at the Cape Fear Country Club. Justin Moore is going to be performing at Live Oak Bank Pavilion as part of the Azalea Fest concert series that takes place. The all-important Arley Luncheon Garden Party taking place Friday morning, 11 o'clock. Some other events, including the Street Fair, will be taking place tomorrow night. Flo Rida also performing at a Live Oak Bank Pavilion on Friday. The parade is taking place Saturday morning, plus the Street Fair and all of the other events happening throughout the weekend, including some events throughout the Saturday and Sunday as well. I'll throw a link to this in the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig Azalea Fest, a major part of the economy here in southeastern North Carolina. The weather looks nice, even warm, very warm temperatures. Looking at the forecast this morning that was produced and brought forward by Gannon Medwick over at WECT News. Look at these temperatures heading into the weekend. 86 degrees on Friday, 86 on Saturday, 83 on Sunday. So very warm temperatures. It should be, for the most part, pretty sunny Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Rain not even in the forecast. Very, very low percentages, 10-20% throughout the weekend and throughout Azalea Fest. So fortunately, the weather will be nice, even hot in some areas, depending on what events you're going to be taking place in and doing over the next couple of days. Looking forward to the Azalea Fest. And looking forward to all of the events coming up there. Taking a look at some other news this morning that we are tracking, at least six federal agencies are set to offer workers a new deferred resignation opportunity in the latest attempt by the Trump administration to slash the size of the U.S. government. employees at the Department of Housing and Urban Development and Agricultural Department on Monday night received emails, which were obtained by NBC News, presenting them with options to resign while staying on paid leave for several months. Transportation Department employees received a similar note about the program Tuesday morning. A spokesperson for the General Services Administration and the Energy Department told NBC News that the deferred resignation program was opened up to its eligible employees as well, and the Defense Department said that civilian workers received a similar offer on Friday. As it stands right now, the White House has said about 75,000 federal workers have accepted the administration's first offer for them to receive a very handsome severance package and give them, in some cases, 6+ months of paid time for them to take this deferred resignation program, which allowed workers to resign but get paid through September. Not every worker, of course, is eligible for the program. It depends on whether their position is considered critical, according to emails that were received by NBC News and by certain departments within the federal government. Certain employees at the Transportation Department also are ineligible, including public safety workers at places like the Federal Aviation Administration. So this is not for every single worker in these departments. It's individuals that are not deemed essential or critical. The letter sent to Energy Department employees said that the program was being instituted to, quote, mitigate the effects of potential involuntary separation, which means you're going to get fired when these agencies scale down, and allow employees to, quote, take needed time for future planning while continue to be paid through the designated period. The Housing Department program has stipulations for employees planning to retire in the fall, according to an email HUD workers received. The first deferred resignation proposal, sent weeks before government funding was set to expire, sparked confusion over whether employees who took the offer could expect payments from agencies whose budgets had not been set past mid-March. During the initial opt-in period for the deferred resignation program, many employees expressed concerns about the validity of the program because the agencies were under a temporary continuing resolution through March 14th, read the email sent to HUD employees, referring to the government funding and the deferred resignation program. The email then said, quote, this uncertainty may have prevented some employees from taking advantage of the program. Since the passage of a full-year continuing resolution, many employees have asked if the program would be available again, according to the HUD email. In a memo on Friday, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth directed his team to implement another deferred resignation program. A news release published over the weekend said that the program was being reopened for nearly all DOD civilians, of which there are about 900,000 workers before the first program, according to the release. Hegseth said in the memo to his employees, quote, my intent is to maximize participation so that we can minimize the number of involuntary actions that may be required to achieve the strategic objective. The deadline for workers to accept the offer is Monday for Transportation Department employees, April the 8th for Agricultural Department and Energy Department employees, and April the 11th for HUD employees, according to the emails. A General Services Administration spokesperson said that the agency's eligible employees can opt into the program through April the 18th, and the Defense Department declined to provide further details on when the deadline for opting into the program takes place. This seems like a pretty good thing all across the board, does it not? You've got individuals that are in the serious risk of losing their job, which nobody wants to see jobs lost. Nobody wants to see individuals losing their paychecks. I sure don't. But unfortunately, the federal government, individuals within our government, have made decisions over the last 20, 30, 40 years that have put us where we are right now. $36 trillion in debt and a $2 trillion a year federal deficit. That is not sustainable. That is not being fiscally responsible. That is not being smart with the money that the federal government gets from taxpayers, right? We're running up against the tax deadline here in just, next week, I think, tax day? The situation is not sustainable long-term. The situation is not practical long-term. This is a very generous buyout offer. Now, I'm not saying everybody should take advantage of it, but you've got an opportunity in front of you right now, in some cases, to get 6+ months worth of pay, a full salary. That doesn't happen, right? Very infrequently are severance packages 6 months of salary, plus benefits and everything else associated with it as you're looking at these federal employees. This is a very, very generous program. I know the left doesn't like it. We know the Democrats are not in favor of this. They want to keep government the same size that it is right now. They want to keep government the same scope that it is right now and just, I guess, not worry about the future implications and impacts. You know, it's funny, anecdotally here, I was listening to a podcast yesterday, and they were talking about the National Weather Service. This is a podcast that covers weather and things of that nature. And the whole discussion was about NOAA and some of the changes coming to the National Weather Service. And I kept hearing over and over again from these individuals about how, oh, the poor young people that are going into meteorology, the poor young people that want to get into this profession and don't know whether they'll be able to get jobs within the National Weather Service. And while I sympathize with that, I thought to myself, what about all of the other young people in our country? Right, we're concerned about young people, at least these individuals were, as it relates to funding for the National Weather Service. But what about all the other young people that are not in government, that are having to burden the financial mistakes of the past? The individuals right now that are paying into Social Security, but receiving nothing, and as it's predicted right now, will receive nothing when they get to their mid-60s and look at taking Social Security out. Because the program's insolvent, right? The money that you're putting in right now is being withdrawn right now. The program's solvency date is pretty soon. It's within the next like 5 or 7 years. That's a huge problem. So if we want to talk about young people, want to talk about the future generations of this country, that's why these decisions are being made. I don't think they're being made lightly. I don't think that these things are just being done willy-nilly, no concern. No, it's being done very strategically to try and figure out going forward, how do we continue to operate our country in a more fiscally responsible manner? That's why these discussions are coming to the forefront. That's why these discussions are taking place. And yes, people are going to lose their jobs. Yes, temporary hiring freezes are in place. Yes, the size, scope, and scale of government is going to be cut, and that is going to have an impact, and that sucks. But unfortunately, desperate times calls for desperate measures, and we're in that desperate time right now. We are not financially responsible. We are not financially solvent. You cannot continue to go down this path of borrowing money seemingly ad nauseum and never be willing to look at the root cause of the issue, which is an out-of-control, bloated federal government. That's where we sit right now. That's where we are right now. It's not sustainable. It cannot go on forever. Eventually, you are going to hit a point of no return where there's just nothing else. There's no more money to borrow. And then what? Then the entire government collapses? I mean, seemingly that's what's going to happen here. Once the federal government's not able to borrow trillions of dollars a year anymore, they're not able to print money fast enough to keep up with their out-of-control spending, then what? You know, we're so concerned about young people in one specific sector that might not have a job. How about the rest of the freaking country? Found that to be incredibly frustrating as I was listening to that yesterday. So deferred resignation seems like a pretty good deal if you can get it, depending on your age and what kind of skill set you bring to the private sector. Seems like it could be a pretty good deal. We'll keep an eye on it right here on the Nick Craig Show. I want to remind you that you can get daily access to show notes and more by subscribing to the show over on Patreon, patreon.com/Nick Craig. $5, $10 a month. You can also set a custom amount if you believe that you are getting some value out of the show. Support the show financially and, again, get access to those daily show notes, our monthly Zoom chat, and more over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Greatly appreciate everybody that has come on board as we approach month three now of the Nick Craig Show. It is greatly, greatly appreciated. We'll grab a quick break. On the other side, we've got some election results out of both Wisconsin and Florida from last night. Those details coming up here in just a few minutes. As the Nick Craig Show rolls on a Wednesday morning, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on a Wednesday morning, YouTube, Rumble, and X 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. We've got some text messages coming in this morning on the show. You can text and get your comments in live at 910-377-6425. That's 910-377-6425. Leslie is texting in from Wilmington this morning. She says, "The U.S. debt mirrors a personal debt of U.S. citizens, and people who lament reductions in programs just don't get it. They need a good dose of Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University. It's short-term pain for long-term gain." Well, absolutely, Leslie. I'm a huge fan of Dave Ramsey and the FPU, Financial Peace University program, and the teachings of somebody like Dave Ramsey. And it's amazing how, when you look at our federal government, you look at the individuals that are in charge of managing our finances, right? Because they're managing our money up in Washington, D.C. It's not their money, right? They didn't do anything to garner that money. They just collected it through taxes. When you look at the mismanagement of our money in Washington, D.C., it's incredibly frustrating, right? Because you and I can't live our lives like that. Now, you can do it for a period of time, but eventually you run out of individuals and individual places that will let you borrow money, right? You can rack up $10,000 in credit card debt, max them all out, but there's only a certain amount of individuals that are going to lend you money. Then what happens when all of your cards are maxed out and you don't have any money in the bank? Well, that's when you look at foreclosures. That's when you look at filing for bankruptcy, right? It only can happen for a certain period of time, and then it all comes crumbling down in a very quick and fast way. And that's what's going to happen with the federal government. I mean, you don't have to be an econ major to understand that if you borrow indiscriminately, that eventually that situation comes home to affect you, right? And that's exactly what you're going to see here with, unfortunately, what I think you're going to see here with the United States debt if we don't start getting things under control, cutting the $2 trillion deficit and getting back to some semblance of normalcy within the federal government, getting it under control, getting the scope and size of it under control so that you can, you know, continue to prosper as a nation the same way that you would prosper personally if you lived your life in a more fiscally responsible manner. Right? We know the playbook here. It's not very complicated. Now, it's on a much larger scale because it's government. And the amount of money that we're talking about is not tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's billions and trillions of dollars. But the same basic principles still apply. Live within your means and don't spend more than you make. But those are the two golden rules of Dave Ramsey and the whole Financial Peace University thing. Those are the two golden principles. Yet our government has seemingly zero interest in doing that in any rational way. And then when you say, hey guys, we've got a problem here. We're borrowing trillions of dollars a year. We have no way to pay for this stuff. We're borrowing against your kids, grandkids, grandkids to fund the government right now, to fund our wish list, ridiculous programs like, you know, putting electric vehicle chargers and highways all across the country and all this other crap that the left loves to fund. This stuff has an impact. Now, you won't see it because you'll be dead, right? The individuals making these decisions, especially most of the individuals in Washington, D.C., they won't be live long enough to see the impacts. But future generations will, and they're going to have to live with the decisions that are being made right now. That's what's so frustrating about this whole process. We're so caught up in living in the now. We're so caught up in living in what's happening right now that we don't even want to look years down the road, generations down the road, and see what we're doing by burying them in $36+ trillion in national debt. Completely unsustainable. Leslie, thanks for the text this morning at 910-377-6425. Greatly appreciated, and thanks for your support of the show. All right, let's jump into some election results this morning. Some good news, some bad news, kind of a mixed bag last night. But the good news coming out of Florida, Republican candidates won both House special elections last night, expanding the party's slim majority in the lower chamber. According to election results, Republican Jimmy Patronus is projected to defeat Democrat Gay Vallotment in the Sunshine State's first congressional district, which is located in the Florida Panhandle, which in that area, the district's residents overwhelmingly supported President Donald Trump over Vice President Kamala Harris in the 2024 election. That seat was left open following the resignation of Representative Matt Gaetz, who stepped down after being nominated by Trump to serve as the attorney general. Then, of course, we covered those details. Gaetz ultimately withdrew his nomination to the position after it was clear and obvious that he would not get the votes that he needed to be confirmed in the U.S. Senate. The GOP also won the other House seat in Florida, vacated by Mike Waltz, who resigned to serve as Trump's national security advisor. Republican State Senator Randy Fine beat Democrat Josh Weil in the battle for Florida's 6th congressional district. Fine's seemingly lackluster candidacy and Wellesley's significant fundraising advantage prompted reported concerns within conservative circles ahead of Tuesday's race that Congressional District 6 in Florida would be closer than originally anticipated. With everything said and done, it did not end up being as close of a race that many were thinking could have potentially taken place beforehand. And so as you look at the elections out of Florida, I've got a link here somewhere if I can figure out where exactly I put that. If you look at the results in Florida last night, these races were not anywhere near as close as some individuals were thinking. Looking at the Florida 6 race, those details coming out of a Decision Desk HQ, a pretty handed victory for the Republican there, 56.7 to 42.7. So a strong win for the Republicans there and Randy Fine. He'll be heading his way to Washington, D.C. And in the other race, House District 1, a pretty similar results there as well. 57% for the Republican, 42.2% for the Democrat. So Florida still being a shining red example of Republicans having successful election victories. And that is going to be big for Republicans who are currently 2 seats shy in the House, or short, I should say, due to these 2 resignations out of Congress. Should help with the Republicans as they go through and deal with some of these controversial issues over the next couple of months and years, really, as we watch things unfold in Washington, D.C. So that's the good out of last night. The bad takes us to Wisconsin, where a far-left progressive radical Democrat won the Supreme Court election that was taking place in Wisconsin last night. As I mentioned, a couple of elections taking place across the board. And this was a pretty handed victory for the Democrat, Susan Crawford winning with 55.1% of the vote to Brad Schmel, who only received 44.9% of the vote. That is a 95% reporting. Those election results will be confirmed, with the Democrats picking up a big win in the Wisconsin State Supreme Court, the highest court in the state of Wisconsin, backed by big-time Democrat wealthy donors in Wisconsin. Well, it seems that the Wisconsin Supreme Court will stay in the hands of liberals for the foreseeable future after far-left Dane County Judge Susan Crawford handily beat the conservative in that race, Brad Schmel, in that election. With those votes all in, of course, much is at stake. The Supreme Court race is estimated to top $100 million in spending, making it by far the most expensive state judicial race in U.S. history. The totals could double the $56 million spent on a previous record holder race. That was the 2023 Wisconsin Supreme Court race there as well. With that, of course, in Wisconsin and nationally, Democrats have been salivating over the likelihood that a liberal-led court could approve redrawn congressional maps with a significant Democrat advantage in Wisconsin, giving the left an advantage, an enhanced shot at taking back the House in next year's midterm elections. The Crawford campaign was hit with an ethics complaint after the liberal judge was a featured speaker at on a big donor advisory Zoom call that dangled with that possibility. She, on the call itself, talked about how we're going to flip this court and we're going to continue to help Democrats in the state legislature in Wisconsin draw maps that are favorable to our party. So what we've learned coming out of there is that this majority will continue 4-3 Democrat to Republican majority in the state of Wisconsin, dealing a pretty big blow to Republicans that thought they had a shot of winning this race. Now, here's the reality of it. And I don't think I'm painting this with any sort of silver lining. The reality is the Trump administration is doing a lot in Washington, D.C. right now. The Trump administration is completely dismantling things that Democrats, in some cases, have worked decades on putting into effect. I mean, just look at the Department of Education, something that started back in, the 70s by Democrat progressive Jimmy Carter. In the stroke of a pen, that thing is being dismantled. And so it's no surprise that Democrats right now are livid. I mean, they are fired up beyond belief. And the result of having a party fired up is they've got better turnout. I mean, elections are not necessarily won on the issues, and in some part they are. But elections really are won when it comes to turnout. Whatever party, whatever candidates can turn their voters out wins. It's a relatively simple math equation. We have more people that show up to vote, we win. It's not overly complicated. Now, there's a lot of nuance that gets into, well, why did people turn out? What were the issues that drove voters to the poll? That's where you get into the weeds and start getting into the broader discussion of winning issues, winning policies, losing issues, losing policies. Sure, all of that is valid and makes sense. But it's no surprise right now that the left is fired up. They just took a royal ass-whooping back in November. Their party got shellacked in the presidential election. They completely blew the Senate and did not and were not successful in taking over a majority in the House. And we've seen over the last 70 days of this new administration that Trump is in the process of completely dismantling a large majority of the Democrats' apparatus, USAID. The organization that they use to pay themselves a whole bunch of money through nonprofits and NGOs. Right, that's a huge blow to the left. And so I'm not necessarily surprised with the results out of Wisconsin. I think it makes a lot of sense. These have been a very rough 70 days for Democrats. And this is this could be a foreshadow into what the midterm elections look like. And this would not be anything that is new, anything that is surprising, anything that is unheard of. Now, I'm sure the media will spin it as a huge blow for the Trump administration. But midterm elections very rarely favor the party that's in power. Because it's easier to be the opposition. It's easier to get your base ginned up and out and voting and frustrated and ticked off with what's going on when you're not in power. When you don't have any authority in government. And so this result out of Wisconsin is not overly surprising to me. It's pretty much exactly what I would have expected to take place. Now, it sucks. Could it have some long-term implications for Republicans going forward with redistricting, with new maps being drawn in the state of Wisconsin? Absolutely. And there was a lot of effort, a lot of time that was put into this Wisconsin Supreme Court race. And the reality is, Republicans and conservatives were complacent. That's why when you go and look at the results, this was a handily win for the Democrat. Over 1.2 million votes. Now, obviously, this is an off-cycle election. It's, you know, the end of, you know, why is something like this happening, right? It's 4 months removed from the election. I mean, so the turnout wasn't going to be crazy high. The turnout wasn't going to be anything that was astonishing. And the Democrats have more wind in their sail right now in terms of being the opposition party, getting individuals all riled up and showing up and turning out. And this was the end result. We've got a text coming in this morning at 910-377-6425. Make sure you include your name and where you're texting in from, saying, quote, why do I feel like they're getting smarter at cheating? I don't think it's got anything to do with cheating. That's the first thing I saw on X this morning. Oh, they stole the race in Wisconsin. They stole the race by over 220,000 votes. I mean, that's the margin. There's nothing. I've seen nothing to indicate that. And my next story kind of breaks that narrative immediately apart. Because while the Democrat was successful in winning the race, Wisconsin voters also approved a constitutional amendment requiring voter ID. So the same individuals that are voting for a Democrat Supreme Court candidate are, in fact, voting for voter ID. And it makes sense. It makes complete and total sense. This is very similar to elections that we see here in North Carolina, where you've got individuals that vote for both parties or vote for two different issues. Here's the question requiring photo ID in the state of Wisconsin. Overwhelmingly, 62.7% of individuals voted in favor of it, with only 37.3% voting against it. And the only two areas where this failed overwhelmingly was in Madison County and Milwaukee County, two of the big Democrat strongholds. Even Green Bay, Brown County, voted in favor of it. So I don't think there's no cheating going on in Wisconsin. Democrats are fired up right now. Democrats are having all of their entities, all of their institutions dismantled in front of their very eyes. They're pissed off. They're fired up the same way that Republicans were back in November of last year. I want to make sure that we on the right need to be very careful with this constant cheating discussion that takes place. If there's signs of voter fraud, then it absolutely needs to be delved into. But the idea that every time Republicans lose an election, we immediately go to, oh, somebody's cheating. Oh, this is stop the steal. This election was rigged and stolen. It's nonsense. There's nothing to back that up at all. I see the same crap in North Carolina with Mark Robinson getting blown out by 15 points because he was a terrible candidate. Oh, they stole the Mark Robinson election. No, they didn't steal the Mark Robinson election. He was a crappy candidate. The things that he has said and done in the past came back to haunt him, and it turned off middle-of-the-road voters. Wisconsin has got a similar political makeup to North Carolina. You've got a large number of unaffiliated middle-of-the-road voters. I have brought forth the term to you before, ping-pong voters. Individuals that are truly in the middle. They vote for some Democrats. They vote for some Republicans. They like a balance of power. Those people exist. They really do, I promise you. And it's got nothing to do with fraud. It's got nothing to do with cheating. And I guess going forward, Wisconsin is now going to require photo ID. So any race going forward in Wisconsin, the idea that you're going to have ballot stuffing or mass cheating or stealing going on is no longer going to be a valid argument. I don't think the Republicans did anything wrong in the Wisconsin election. I don't think Republicans did anything wrong in that race. You've just got to look at the broader political scale that's going on right now, the narratives that are being drawn on both sides, and the party that is more fired up and engaged right now. That's the Democrats. You've got to remember, the vast majority of individuals do not follow politics as closely as you and I do. They are not in on this stuff each and every day like you and I are. We are the 1%. And so Republicans in Wisconsin just turned out in November to secure a victory for Trump. These individuals are not, most of them, are not going to show back up and vote in a Supreme Court election 4 months later, 5 months later. They're just not going to do it. It's just not going to happen. There's nothing for them to turn out for. They turn on the news, they see Trump's banging away, Trump's getting this squared away, Trump's getting that squared away, Doge is cutting here, there, all over the place. They're satisfied. They'll show back up in 4 years. They'll show, maybe they'll show back up in the midterms, but they'll definitely show back up in 4 years. And so it's just the times in which we're operating, the times in which we're living. It's really hard for the party in charge, especially one that is getting dogged by the media 24/7, to stand out and turn their voters out. It's why midterm elections typically always favor the party that's not in power. Because it's much easier to turn people out, to get them fired up, to get them pissed off, and turn them out to the polls. It's a turnout problem. This is why midterm election or off-cycle elections like the Wilmington City Council election that's happening later this year. That's why those elections are really tough. Not only do you have an urban core that continues to grow and fall further to the left, sway further to the left, but you've got voters that are unengaged. You have voters that watch what goes on at the national level, see what goes on there, but they're not tuned into, they're not involved in what goes on locally. They're not playing a part in their local elections. Individuals that, you know, turns out end up having a huge impact on your day-to-day life, right? That's the irony of individuals that don't vote in every single election that they have the opportunity to. The elections you don't vote in some cases, can be far more important than the ones that you do. Not indicating that the presidential election is not important. It obviously was and is. But how important is the city council election? Talking property taxes, rezoning, business growth, development. I mean, these are major, major issues. And unfortunately, when we look at voter turnout for the election coming up later this year, it's going to be piss poor. It'll be probably less than 25%, which is typically where those municipal elections fall. Nobody shows up. People are not engaged. People don't care. It's one of the reasons that I decided after 6 months of being off the air here in Wilmington to come back and do this show, to keep the local conversation moving, to keep the local discussion happening, because these elections are super important. We just talked about earlier in the show, started off with State Senator Michael Lee becoming the majority leader for the North Carolina Senate. That's huge for our area. To have the second in command in the North Carolina Senate being from Wilmington, having him representing his constituency is me, many of you listening, if you live in New Hanover County, that's huge. And that's a massive, massive thing to have. And it's why a local elections matter. And the General Assembly is a local election. I don't know what the answer to this is. This has been a long time problem on both sides of the political aisle. You know, how are you able to turn out your voters in non-presidential elections? A lot of it comes down to media, comes down to media coverage of what's going on. Major, major discussions there. It's something that if you were talking with a group of political consultants, it's something that they continually scratch their head about. How do we turn more people out? How do we get more individuals interested in elections? How do we get them voting? How do we turn them out when there's not the figure at the top of the ballot like somebody like Donald Trump? When you don't have a major U.S. Senate race. Now, we will have a major U.S. Senate race next year. That, of course, will be the seat that Tom Tillis currently holds. But this is always a major issue. And so, looking at those results in Wisconsin, good that voter ID passed. That should hopefully clear up any issues in the future. Bad that the Democrats contain their majority on the state Supreme Court in Wisconsin and the impacts there. Fortunately, Republicans did also get big wins in Florida. That's great to hear as well. So kind of a mixed bag last night And now we go forward. We wait and see how does this translate out to the midterm elections next year. And you heard a little bit of this earlier this week. I think it was on Monday, maybe. I played the Susie Wiles clip, Trump's White House chief of staff. And she talked about the 18-month time frame from January 20th that they set. That 18 months is calculating in the midterm elections, giving a six-month break between the agenda and the elections to try and rebuild the narrative, to try and go through the process of convincing Republicans to show up and turn out. And so you're seeing a lot happening right now, of course, over the last 70 days. We've talked about a lot of it. You've seen and read a lot about a whole bunch of various issues, and it has a huge impact. It has a massive, massive impact. And so we'll see. There's going to be a primary in March of next year. Get a decent insight into what's going on with that. And then it'll all take place in November. And I know that's obviously very far away. And so, you know, one of the things that I saw going around on social media last night and this morning is, you know, I don't understand why is this happening. It's because people just aren't engaged. Politics is an exhausting sport. Believe me, I do it all day, every day. It's exhausting. Most people are busy. Most people are busy raising their families, living their lives. They have zero interest in being tuned into politics 24/7. They have zero interest following the day in and day out political monotony, which is very important. I mean, don't get me wrong, but they have no interest in following that stuff day in and day out. And I don't blame them. I don't fault them for not wanting to be listening to this stuff 24/7. It's a lot. Most of it's not good. Most of it is pitting people against each other. And there's a lot that goes on here. There's a lot that goes on in our political news cycle. And it's unfortunate that it's a point where people are tuned out. It's unfortunate that individuals don't want to be more involved, but I completely understand it. I don't really know how you begin to change that. So turning our attention this morning to our final story today, we've got a big day taking place in Washington, D.C., as Trump will be making some major announcements around 4 o'clock this afternoon as it relates to tariffs. That discussion will be happening with secretaries of various Trump administration officials being behind the president as he is expected to speak in the Rose Garden this afternoon. We will get additional details on that. We still don't have exactly what those plans are going to look like. We'll get those details tomorrow morning with economist Vance Ginn. He'll join us here on the Nick Craig Show tomorrow morning to walk us through what we learned and, of course, the impact. Right, the very interesting game that Trump is playing right now with tariffs. The idea that he wants to bring manufacturing back to the United States, all in agreement of that. I think that is a phenomenal thing to want. The question is, and this has always been the question, I even brought this up before the election, can the American people sustain the temporary short-term pain that is likely to be caused by this? So that is what we're going to be tracking out of Washington, D.C. this afternoon. We'll have some clips from Trump. Plus, we'll talk with Vance Ginn. And again, coming up later in the week, we're looking forward to catching up and chatting with the new Senate Majority Leader. Congratulations to State Senator Michael Lee. Great news for Southeastern North Carolina. Well, that's going to do it for a Wednesday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for joining us live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. And of course, 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts, at the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for joining us. We're back tomorrow morning at 7.